We'd like you to join us in celebrating the recovery and fellowship that we have come to know, need, and deserve in our lives. We encourage you to share in our NA unity through your experience, strength, and hope in our wide variety of workshops. This is an open retreat. All are welcome to attend. However, we ask that only addicts share in workshops. In accordance with our seventh tradition, we are fully self-supporting. Thank you for registering. We should remember that our actions this weekend are a direct reflection on Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. Let's carry the NA message, not the mess. What's the NA message? Our message is that any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and a promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict that still suffers, because that is all we have to give. That no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction, basic text, page 65. The NA way. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross addicts, or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not our differences. To the press, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. If any members of the press are present, please come to the registration table, where you will be referred to our public information chairperson. We respectfully ask that no pictures be taken during the unity retreat by the press. If any NA members are approached by the press, please refer them to the registration table. Remember, no one person represents NA. Please do not attempt to represent NA to the press alone. Thank you. Please observe no smoking in all buildings. Hello, everyone. I am an addict named Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Welcome to this workshop entitled Making Amends. Would you please help me open with a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, followed by the surrender prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Could we please have the reading of We Do Recover at the podium, please?
I'm an addict. We do recover when at the end of the road we find we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs. We all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts have ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way is improving themselves and lives of many addicts. Is available to us all as a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thanks, John. Okay, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Randy, from the Together We Can group of Narcotics Anonymous in Northwest area, Free State of NA. Randy.
I'm Matt, my name's Randy. Some of you know me, some of you don't. I'm from Baltimore. It's about a 4.5 hour drive to get up here, and I always look forward to coming to this retreat, because where I live, it's four walls, it's concrete, and it's people. You know, and I get out here and I see trees, and I like go into like sensory overload. A little bit about me before I share that. Basically, what is the eighth and ninth step is what they told me that the workshop was on. I attended my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting in 1987, and I've been clean ever since. And I'm real proud of that. And people say that, you know, clean time is a number and this and that. But if you don't think clean time counts, get some, and you'll find out it does. Because it allows me the freedom to change. And as long as I don't pick up, I have another chance to, you know, to change that cycle of where I go. The eighth step indicates that I need to make a list of all the people I harmed. I'm ready to make amends to those people. And it doesn't necessarily say people, it just says the harm that I've caused. And I guess I had about 2 years clean when I did my first eight steps.
And when I did it, when it was all said and done, there was 79 names, places, and things on this list. And I brought it to my sponsor. My sponsor was not a very verbose or outgoing person, but he actually pissed in his pants from laughing so hard at my list. And I was offended. I thought, like, well, did I do it wrong? And he said, no. He said, I've never seen a more complete list in my entire life. He says, but the problem that we have is that we've got to narrow it down just a little bit. I said, why? He says, well, people that you ripped off in dope deals don't have to go on the list. I don't think you need to make amends to them. I said, okay. And my problem with it is that when I made that first amends list, and I'm sure we all went through that same process, is that I would put a name on it and then justify how I could take it off. Because what I would do is I would look at their part in my amends and realize that, well, if they hadn't done this, I wouldn't have done that, which means I wouldn't have to make an amends to that person. And what it talks about in the 8th step, it talks about the harm that I did, not the harm that anybody else did. And it's real important, because what happens is people look at the steps and they either put words in that don't belong there, or they leave words out that are real valuable to what the step says, like in the second step where it says, could be restored to sanity. And people put in would. No promises other than freedom from active addiction. Everything else is definitely a gift because you do the work to get it. So I did this list, and what I found out was, for me, as I was going through the process of writing it down, is that in the last 5 years of my active addiction, there was no amends to make because I was totally isolated in my addiction. I hear people talk about how they went to concerts and they're at. Yeah, I didn't shoot dope. I shot dope. I don't know about what you did, but heroin was my drug of choice. And I used to shoot dope. Well, after I shot dope, I didn't go to show. Okay, I didn't go to the ballet after doing a line of dope in my house. You know, I was real isolated. I didn't share my stuff with anybody else. I would cop it, I'd go home, I'd fire it, I'd nod out, I'd wake up and do the same thing all over again. I was not a social butterfly at the end of my addiction. The self-centeredness of my disease would not allow me to be a social butterfly, because the self-centeredness says, get it all for you, don't give it to anybody. You don't want to share your shit, they wouldn't share it for you. Because see, if you do it, it's a really good lie, and you nod out when you wake up, the shit's gone. So the self-centeredness of the disease says, don't be affiliated with anybody. But when I look back at my patterns and my 4 steps so easily set up my 8th step. You know, when I wrote about the patterns in my behavior, when I wrote about the relationships in my family, when I wrote about the relationships with women, when I wrote about the relationships that I had with employers, with the school system, with myself, the list of amends was right there. There was no struggle for me to find out the harm I had done to others. The biggest mistake I made in doing an 8th step was the first person on the list that should have been there was me, and I didn't do it. Yeah, and what that said to me was, still, I was still at a point in my recovery, 2 years clean, where there wasn't an inkling that I loved who I was. Because see, if I cared just an inkling about me, I would make sure that I had made amends to myself first. Because to be honest with you, I did more harm to me than I did to anybody else. Yeah. I took this precious little thing called Randy C., and turned him into an animal. And that's literally what my addiction did. It turned me into an animal. And I didn't have, at that point in my recovery, 2 years clean, I wasn't in a place in my recovery where I could look myself in the mirror and still feel good about what I saw coming back. Yeah, I had used. You're absolutely right. I was clean. Okay? But clean time does not equate recovery. Clean time equates action. Recovery is about change. And I hadn't really changed. You know, and I, even with working the 6th step and acknowledging my character defects, I was still adding to that 8th step list by the time I got to it. Yeah, because we think because we get clean, all of a sudden we're not going to do harm anymore. And we all know better. I mean, is there anybody here who's clean that hasn't acted out on the character defect clean and caused harm to someone? Yeah. I can tell you that the nature of my disease is, and it goes back very early on, and I can describe it real simple. At 38 days clean, I was asked to chair my first meeting. And it was at a place called Epic House in Cagersville. And I get to the meeting early, and I'm all piss and vinegar at this point. Wow, man, somebody thinks I got something to share. I'm the shit. Now I'm ready to go. And I get up there, and as they're starting the readings, I look over. And of course, the chairperson's here, and I'm sitting here. And I look over, and this girl smiles at me. Not a high smile, but I'll meet you after the meeting. Now, in my mind, me and that girl were married, okay? We had 2 kids. We bought a house. We had to take a fence, the car, money in the bank. She then cheated on me, took my house, my car, my clothes, my money, and by the time they got to the dishes under my mouth, I looked at her and said, "Bitch." The self-centered nature of my disease created in a man to someone that all they did was smile at. But I was so ashamed and guilt-ridden by my past still that I could not look at this person and realize that maybe they just thought I had a nice smile. Yeah, I had to take it another way. So I got this eight-step ritual, and all it says is I have to begin the process to become ready to make the amends. It does not say make the amends. It says make a list of people that you harmed and become willing to make the amends. Now, the most valuable book that I own outside the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous is Webster's Collegiate Dictionary. If you don't have one, get one. Because what the word amends means in Webster's, it doesn't say, I'm sorry. What it says is, to change. Sometimes saying I'm sorry is appropriate, amend, for what you're going to find on your list. Sometimes it's simply about changing how you do things. And for me, I had a history with women that was abusive. Okay? I never hit a woman. I did worse. Okay? I talked bad to them. I left emotional scars on women. And what I needed to do to make the amends is I had to start treating women with respect. By doing that, I made the amends. No one else had to pay a price for my lack of faith in that I could have a relationship. And I can tell you that with 15 and a half years clean, I've been married come next week 19 years to the same person who I knew 8 days and got married. This is not a recommendation for courtship. Okay? It's just how it works. I used the dog method. One sniff, she was wearing Shalimar, I was dead. 9 days later, we were married, and next week will be 19 years. You know, and what I found out with her is that I'm making amends to her on a daily basis. Okay? Because, and a good example of how I'm making amends to her is all you gotta do is look at my head. Okay? I made a bet with a guy 6 months ago. And in that bet, I said, if you could stay clean for a year, I'll shave my head. And 2 weeks ago, in a Sunday morning meeting, he picked up his keychain. And I went back, and my sponsor, John, was with me, come visiting, and John shaved my head for me when I got home. There was only one problem. It was about 11:30 at night, and my wife was asleep. At 7:15, I am awakened to, who the fuck are you? I sleep on my side. So she turned around and saw a bald-headed man in her bed. I've been making amends ever since. The amends were made in the form of a Macy's gift certificate. Because she loves to shop. And I'm not stupid. I like having my wife happy. It's a nice place to be when you're married. So I started making this list, and what I did was I took my experiences that I wrote about in the four steps, and I started breaking them down. And I started looking first at my family. And the amends that I've been, did I need to make an amends to my parents? Did I need to make an amends to my brothers, to my uncles, to my mother? And what I found out was that I had, by the time I got to that eighth step, I had already begun that process of making the amends, because what happened was that I had become trustworthy again. And my father had no problem with me being able to give me a key to the house. So I made that eighth step list, and I went to my sponsor, and we looked it over, and he took some names off, and we talked about the nature of why they were on the list, and he wanted to know why you feel you need to make an amends to this person. Not the nature of what the amend would be, just why do you feel the need to do it? And what would happen was if it came to a process for me where I was able to claim my responsibility in the nature of what the wrong was, then he felt it was okay and it needed to go in that way. Okay, and what it was is that the nature of the wrong was as I saw where I chose to act out on the character defect by my own choosing and the price that other people paid, because what happened was is 99% of the time when I acted out on the character defect, it always involved somebody else paying the price for it. Very rarely did I pay the immediate price for acting out on that character defect. Because what happened was that I'd be in presence of somebody who enacted fear in me. You would make me fearful. And because I did not know how to deal with that, I would do whatever I could to keep you distant. And normally what that would be is I would be abusive to you, you would walk away, and the fear would dissipate because it was no longer there. Okay, and what I had to start doing is being okay with being afraid. There's nothing wrong with being afraid of something. But I had to learn that through my process. So I started making this list, and finally we got the list down, and it was okay. And to me, if you're working on that step, please do not go and make an amends before you talk to your sponsor. I've seen more people go out and use over a nice step than any other time. People say, oh, the sixth step will kick you. No, the ninth step is where you'll probably use that, not the sixth step. Sixth step is stuff you're doing right now actively. Ninth step is stuff you've never, ever done before. You know, and that's where the fear comes in, because we talk about faith is simply walking through something, not knowing what the end result's going to be, but knowing whatever it is, it comes from God, not me, so it's got to be okay. So I'll do that. So I talked to my sponsor about the ninth step. He says, okay. He said, and it came at such a good time for me. And what happened was, it came to me showing more respect to my wife when it came to my relationship, my past relationship with women, is that I needed to break that cycle with my wife and respect her opinion and things, and respect her right to be involved in decisions when it came to our home, or how we lived, or where we were going to move, and all the other things that came to us sharing a life together. And when it came, and here's the thing that happened, and it was probably the most prophetic amends I made, the one, and there's two of them actually that mean more to me than anything else. The first one was, I told my sponsor, I said, you know, it's not enough that I just act okay with my wife. I said, because I did a lot of harm with women. Because what would happen is, my history is I would get involved, and I would hook them in. I was a charming son of a bitch. And I would hook you in. I mean, we had the ability as addicts to look at another individual, whether they're in recovery or not, and size them up within about 30 seconds to be exactly what we need, they want us to be. You know what I'm saying? We can look at you, and I know exactly what you need for me to get what I need from you. Okay, and what had to happen was, I had to learn how to break that cycle. And what I did was, he says, you're really going to make a name for women? He says, yes. Is there a shelter where you live? I said, yeah, there's a thing called the House of Ruth, which is a shelter for battered women. And I went to my bank account, and I took $500 out, and I put it into an envelope, and I went in the House of Ruth. He says, now, here's the kicker. I want you to go into the House of Ruth, and I want you to ask for the manager. And for the manager, I want you to hand them the envelope, and walk away. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? They can't know who you are, and you can never go back there and try to claim them. I got more good feelings about doing that, because we talk about unconditional love. Try doing something for somebody and then not tell anybody about it. Try doing a good deed for somebody and not telling your sponsor or somebody else that you did it. You really want to find out what it is. I mean, service is a prime example of that. But if you really want to know what service is about, read in the beginning of the basic text. It says the only motive for NA service is to better carry the message to the addict who's still suffering, period. It's not to be recognized because you're doing your service. You do service is inconvenient at best, and we all know it. Service always happens at 2 o'clock in the morning when you got the hotline. You know, service always happens when you get a 12-step call to go on at 3 o'clock in the morning in the worst area of town, and you just got to bed an hour earlier. Service is never convenient. It's always on the weekends when you want to go away, yet you promise you're on the entertainment committee and this dance has got to go on. And it's always you who sets it up, and it's always you who has to bring the stereo, and it's always you who has to go to the store to pick up the stage. Never convenient. And we can get attitudes behind it, and again, have to make another amends, because what happens is we make other addicts responsible for our feelings, because nobody else is doing it. So service work can generate the need to make amends as well. Believe me, I've been there and had to do it. So I made this list up, and it was thorough, and I met with my sponsor, and I don't think I was more scared in my entire life. Because what happened was, is it took 5 years to make one amends, and it took almost 12 years to make the other. The other ones that I was able to do. One amends was to my dog, Mina. The other amends was to my father. When I was young, I wasn't very good at animals. In fact, I was very abusive to animals. I was the one who used to light the tail of a cat. I used to suffocate birds. And because it was a human being, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And then when we got married, my wife wanted a dog, and so I got this Pekingese, and we named him Minion. And Pekingese are the ugliest dog God ever created, but they got the most beautiful mentality in the world. They're devoted animals. And we had him for 12 years, and about 4 years ago, he was diagnosed with having cancer of his palate. And you can't operate on a dog's palate. They can't live. They can't breathe without their palate. And so we had to make the decision to put him down. And I agreed to be present while that process occurred. And I
thought I could do it, because here was a chance, all the harm I had caused, now I could at least do something about it. And what happened was is that they put the IV in his arm, and I went berserk. I mean, I was screaming, "Don't go, please don't go." That self-centered nature didn't want to walk through the tunnel. Part of me said, "I'd rather have my dog suffer than me to have to walk through the pain that I'm going to feel when he's gone." The difference was, I only thought about it about 3 seconds. And I looked at the vet and I said, "It's okay." And the last thing my dog did was reach up and lick my face. And I got to be honest with you, there isn't a day that doesn't go by that I'm going to think about that little dog. You know, I learned more about responsibility from having to learn how to take care of that dog than I ever did in anything else. I learned more about what it meant to be responsible to something that could not help itself by being willing to be the person who stood up and walked him and fed him. And in the end, I had to be responsible for putting him out of his pain, because he had did nothing in my life to cause me anything other than joy. You know, and there are still times when I'm driving down the road that I got to pull my car over because I'm just sobbing so badly thinking about how much I missed that little dog. You know, and I share that story because a lot of us have lost pets and never given ourselves permission to grieve. Because we think because it's a dog, it doesn't matter, it doesn't hold weight. And you're wrong. You know, I learned how to love through that little dog. You know, I learned how to care and be responsible. The other amends that I had to make happened last year. I never had a very good relationship with my father. And about 3 years ago, he had triple bypass surgery. And as a result of having surgery, he was diagnosed with traumatic onset diabetes. And I don't know if you know anything about diabetes, but diabetes might be one of the most vicious medical illnesses you can get. It usually robs you of your sight, it can usually rob you from your limbs before it's said and done. And my father, during his process, ended up losing his left leg up to his hip. He was hospitalized, had 70-some surgical procedures. And my other two brothers, for some reason, weren't able to show up for that. And I had to make the decision to become present in my father's life. And I had done many things to bring harm to him, because I envisioned him being responsible for a lot of the things that happened to me. You know, if him and my mom had divorced, I wouldn't have gone on the road I did, and I wouldn't be where I was today. Why couldn't you be a better father? Why, when I looked in the neighborhood and saw all these kids who had who were Jack Purcell, fish heads, Chuck knows it, Taylor, wearing fish heads, Chuck Taylors, and I got to wear tux. And why do they get to wear, the polo shirts, and I've got to wear ring-neck t-shirts? Always comparing it out and then saying to you weren't good enough, even with shoe sales. That's what he was. And so what happened was is that it came quite apparent that my father's life was coming to an end. And my father came to me and asked me if I was willing to participate in his death. And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I'm not afraid to die." He said, "I just don't want to die alone." And so I started going to the nursing home every day and visiting him. And the first day I would go, I would leave and come back and I'd be smiling. And by about the second week, every time I would leave there, I'd be in tears, because he was deteriorating in front of me. And what happened was, is he gained the freedom from the knowledge of his own death that was coming short. And he chose to share with me stuff that he had never, ever shared before. In the week before his death, he told me that he loved me and couldn't have been more proud of me. In the week before his death, he said the only thing that he could imagine better than that is that I finally get a chance to own that home that I always wanted. The week before that, he said that besides serving in the government in the army in World War II, having 3 sons was the proudest thing he ever did. And before he died, what he said was that he was sorry that he couldn't give me the things that other kids had. And I looked at him, I said, "Dad," I said, "you gave me stuff that you can never put a price on. You were always there." And we shared this deep emotional stuff for over a week. And on the day he died, he winked at me. He knew it was coming, but he slipped into a coma very shortly thereafter. And the funeral, we had a military funeral, and I don't know if you know what a military, if you've never been to a military funeral, they're probably the most moving thing you can imagine. And I'm sitting there in my Sunday suit at the Jewish section of the
to a veteran cemetery in Owensville, about 5 minutes from my house. And this guy comes up wearing his white naval uniform with his hat on, and comes over and he salutes me, and he gives me a flag, and he reaches down and says, "The President of the United States and the grateful nation mourn the passing of a true hero." And I truly understood what they meant, even though they were talking about his military service, they hadn't had a clue. And so they buried him in that ground, and a week later I went there, and I'm looking at the ground, and I got probably the most important piece of information of how to deal with my grief and sadness in regards to the passing of my father. I was kneeling down by his grave, and I was sobbing, and my wife came over, and she put her hand on my chest, and she said, "Maxie, he prayed. He said he prayed for you." And so I'm able to carry my father's memory with me, and it's hard. And I didn't realize how hard it was until June 19th of this year when it was Father's Day and I didn't have anybody to send a card to. Then the true reality of it hit. But I had the opportunity, due to Narcotics Anonymous, to do the right thing for the right reason and make amends to him while he was still here. There are some people that I wasn't able to make amends to because they passed on before I got clean. And all I could do is live a life based on spiritual principles and do them. Now, here's the key to working a successful ninth step. If you slept with your best friend's wife, it is not okay to go to him and say, "Hey, I'm clean, by the way." Because the response that you'll probably get is, "I'm glad you're clean, but you need to get the hell out of my house." There are certain amends that can't be made, because if you look at the ninth step the way it's worded, it says to harm them or others. And just so you'll know, in the list under others, comes you. If knowing, going, and making a direct amend is going to cause possible harm to you, either physically, emotionally, or spiritually, it's probably best just to don't do it. Am I saying it's easy to make amends? No, because again, you're working on faith. You don't know whether or not the amend that you're going to do is going to be accepted. But the ninth step's not about acceptance by others. It's about getting okay with you and knowing that what you're doing is the right thing for the right reason. I can't control whether John can accept my amend. The only thing I can control is that I've got to make it. I've got to be willing to stand up and be responsible for my actions. And to try, you know what I love about the ninth step? If you look at the first eight steps, they're totally focused on us. Did you notice that? The first eight steps are about us getting okay and dealing with us. And then we get to the ninth step, and Narcotics Anonymous did something incredible. They built the step in that allows others to heal. They look at our history and say, "Look at what he did. Wouldn't it be nice if we could allow the people that these people harmed a chance to heal?" Because see, normally what happens is we come in like a wrecking ball, we go bam, bam, and cause chaos, and then we hit. And the people normally are left going, "What happened?" See, now, I know nobody's going to be able to relate to this next thing, but if you do, you can chuckle. Has anybody ever gotten in a relationship, whether you be male or female, had the relationship get to the point where the other party said, "Let's take this a step further"? And when they went to work the next day, you passed your shit and you left. Because the fear hit. Has anybody ever done that? I know nobody's ever experienced that. Guess what the person who you left thought when they came home? "What did I do?" Ninth step allows you to go back and say, "You didn't do anything. It's about me. It's about the nature of my disease is self-centered. Self-centered fear ruled me for so many years. It said that it was okay to do the harm because I was taking care of me and let them take care of them." Ninth step says, I need to step up to the plate. Not only claim responsibility for what I did, but try to ease some of the suffering. Because if truly you want to get out of the self-centered nature of yourself, be of service to others. It kills the nature of the self-centered disease. When you're of service to others, you win. Okay? And the easiest way to know if your service is others is when you make a decision to benefit somebody other than you. Prime example will probably be like if you're in your home group and you're the king or queen of your home group, and you know who these people are. Yeah, but as soon as they walk in, it's like the cheer season, like, "Norm!" Yeah, everybody knows this one person. And there's always this person who's got that 65 days clean that's right on the edge. And elections come up. And of course, everybody wants Norm to be the secretary. But the reality of it is, if Sally's got to be the secretary, it might be the thing that's happening. See, I had that happen to me. I was the Norm in my home group.
And I knew that if Sally got the secretary job, she might stay clean. I would stay clean if I didn't get it. And what I did is I withdrew my name at a nomination. They did her. She just celebrated 7 years clean last year. It's not about me. Okay? It's about the needs of others. Now, my needs always seem to get taken care of. The ninth step allows me to take care of the needs of others. Other people need to heal. I mean, we have a vicious disease, and a lot of times we just get to others that we really didn't mean to do. We just didn't know any other way of doing what we were doing. You know, because when that anybody's ever been dope sick before? Don't you hate that feeling? And guess what? You'll do anything in the world not to be dope sick. Even steal from the parents. Even go in there. I stole my mother's wedding ring and hocked it for $23 to get a shot of dope. Was I thinking the harm it was going to do to her? No. All I could think was, is I was in my room, shaking, shitting, pissing, throwing up, and I hated it. And I was willing to do whatever it took to make those feelings stop. Just like when we get here and we ask you, are you willing to do whatever it takes to stay clean? Well, if you're willing to do that, then you got to be, that part of that process is, you got to be willing to face that unhealthy, unsafe, uncomfortable feeling in your gut when you get to the ninth step and you say, well, this is going to hurt, or this is going to be uncomfortable. Well, big deal. Be a big boy or girl, stand up and play it and realize, you know something? You caused the uncomfortable. If you're feeling uncomfortable, it's because you know what you did was wrong. We develop a conscience around here and then we hate it. But you don't understand. No, I perfectly understand the addict. I understand exactly what the addict's about. I know the addict likes the softer, gentler, easier way around everything. You take a drop of water and put it on a pile of dirt, what's it do? It goes like this till it gets to the bottom. And my nature is I do the same thing. I get faced with a tough situation and I'm going to find the faster, easier, softer, gentlest way around it so I don't have to walk through the pain. Because I don't know what's going to happen on the other side. It really doesn't matter. My chef says, it doesn't matter what John Kay reacts to my amendment. It doesn't matter that George might not accept my amendment. What matters is I stand up and I go to George and say, you know something? I'm wrong. I need to tell you I'm sorry for how I acted towards you. It was wrong. And I hope you'll accept my amendment. It doesn't matter if he does. It doesn't matter. Because when he gets to his eighth step, I'm going to be on his list. Because his recovery says I should have accepted. And I need to go back and make an amendment. This is all cyclical in nature. Always comes back. Always. You never escape it. You might escape through it the first time, but God has a funny way of keep putting stuff into your life over and over and over and over again. And they were smart enough to make a 10th step so I don't have to keep making a huge 8-step list. It gives me the opportunity not to sit in the illness any longer than I have to. But the 8th and 9th steps come at a point in time in our recovery where we've done an incredible amount of work on self. And now that the insides have started to heal and are starting to look better, the outsides need to be addressed. And the outsides being the harm that we did to others. The 4th and 8th step address who and what they were. 9th step gives me the ability to make it right. Again, not doing it based on, gee, if they accept it, then it's a successful amendment. No, it's not what it's about. Because we make direct amends whenever possible unless we either harm them or others. And we all know who, and if you talk to a sponsor about this, it'll be very clear who them and others are. You know, I had to go to the graveyard to make a couple of my amends because the people that I had harmed were dead. And what I did was I wrote long letters and went to the grave and I laid there knowing that it would be my job to make sure that message got through, one way or another. Have all of my amends always been successful? No. But I've made them. Not always made them gracefully. Not always made them with a lot of grace and character and style, but I made them. I made the effort. I made the effort to the best of my ability, and that's all that was ever asked of me. It was to try to work these steps to the best of my ability in all of my affairs. If you apply a spiritual principle towards that process, it'll be okay. If you're facing amends out of anger, it ain't going to work. Because that's really self-centered, because we think just because we get here and we sit and we get clean that nothing bad's going to happen to us. Or we're not going to do bad things to others. I don't know about you. I do bad things to others all the time. I'm a human being. I'm not God. I once heard a funny story about making amends and how it works. He says, if you got on a plane and you looked into the cockpit and you saw me behind one seat and you saw God in the other, which one would you want to drive in a plane? very clear. All I did was pray that God would give me the courage to make the amends to the best of my ability and to do it faithful in love and caring and desire to allow them to experience the freedom that I've experienced. Because for the freedom to stop with me would kill Narcotics Anonymous. If the freedom that I experienced was only limited to me, if only I experienced the joy of changing my life one day at a time to where I became not only a productive member of society, but a productive member of me again. If I'm the only person that experienced that, and I did not pass that on, because we always talk about one addict helping another, right? My step is not necessarily about one addict helping another. It's about one addict helping another person, whether they be in recovery, or they be somebody that I harmed in my family, whether it be the school system. You know, I started this year and I put my name on the substitute teacher list to be a substitute teacher at a local high school. You know why I did that? Because I terrorized my high school. I terrorized my high school. I firebombed my high school and burnt the gym to the ground. John doesn't even know this. I've never shared this with him. John just stopped paying my sponsors. He doesn't like firebombers. That's what he draws the line. If I was a priest, he'd be okay with it. But firebombers, he doesn't accept. But the reality of it is, we all have our own stories, and they're all personal, you know. And the amends we make is personal, you know. And none of our sins are worse than others. I'll leave you with a humorous story, because I always believe that if I'm going to start a story based in reality, that we should end way over in nonfiction somewhere. This deals with an eighth step, but it deals with it with farm animals. So just hold on to your seat. I had a sponsor that came to me. He had 4 years clean. It was his first 4 steps. He was 89 pages long. And I looked at him. I said, "You know something? If you were willing to write it, I got to be willing to hear it, because that's what sponsorship really is about." And he starts sharing this gut-wrenching story about where he's been, what he's done, where he's gone, the relationship, everything. And we were done. I said, "Is that it?" He said, "Yeah." And I did what I normally do with somebody when we're passing. When we're passing the fifth step one, and I said, and I took his hands in mine, and I said, "Not forever and not for always, but just for this moment in time, we are entirely ready to have God and reason to reset this character." And of course, they're real motivated at that point. They're responsible, smart thing to do it right then. "Oh, yeah, let's go," you know. I said, "Great." And I said, "All right, we're going to meet here tomorrow. I'm going to take this 4 step." And I used to have a fire pit in my back of my yard. I said, "We're going to burn it in symbolism to let it all go." Okay, he's all excited. He goes to the door and he stops. Turns around and says, "Ever since I was a young boy, I just had to take it." I said, "What?" And he said, and he, his eyes were filled. He said, "Ever since I was a young boy, I've had sex with chickens." I looked at him. "Are you serious?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "I only got one question." And this guy was physically shaking. I said, "Did you die too?" See, we come in our class now and we're thinking the stuff that we do is real, like we're the only person that did what we did. And how could we possibly say I'm sorry for some of the shame and guilt-ridden things that we did? And by sharing these steps, what happens is, when we share a fourth or fifth step with the sponsor, is to find out his chicken side too. And my stuff's not very unique. And if he could have walked in front of me and did what I did, and have gone back to the hen house and made amends, so to speak, so can I. You know, we get courage from each other to do this stuff. You know, we talk about how we come to NA and all we do is share about the awful, terrible things that happened to us, losing a job, and you'll relate to the pain. You know something? You're responsible for carrying the joy back to us too. You're responsible for coming back here and talking about the heroic stuff that you do. You're responsible for calling and coming back here and saying, "You know something? I went to my mom and dad last night, and in tears in my eyes, I shared the fact that, you know something, I didn't appreciate how great parents you were, and I really do, and I'm so sorry for what I did. And my parents came over and they hugged me and they told me that they loved me, and then I was welcomed back in their house." Because see, that's how I get the courage to make an amend when it's my turn. Then it's not unknown anymore. I've seen someone else has gone there before me and survived it. We survive our recovery. We really do. We survive, the guy down in Tennessee says, when the storms come, your foundation better be deep, because what's going to happen is you're going to be doing this. And the nice stuff, some of those storms come. It can be a scary time for a lot of people. And you can have some good lengths of clean time when you do this. And you're not exempt from being afraid. Clean time doesn't keep you from being afraid of doing stuff.
just need to have a little bit more time and experience to have to make the effort. And so when you get to the step, be honest. Open-minded willingness and honesty. More importantly, when you start making that step, you've got to be honest. You got to write down your part in your life and your escapade and your relationships with others. Not their part. Leave it out. No, it's not your concern. Your concern is what you did. You've got to meet with your sponsor and show them this list. Cop what part's yours and come up with a game plan of how to address this. And the game plan might not be that I need to go to George or Don and say, I'm sorry. It might be, you know something? From this day forward, I make the pledge to treat women with respect instead of disrespect. And by doing that, I make the amends because no longer does anybody else have to feel my wrath because of my fear and shame and guilt for what I perceive the relationship to be. And if your sponsor says, don't make the amends, don't make the amends. Okay, there's with about 60 days clean, all addicts claim the same mantra. Everybody knows what a mantra is, right? The 10. 1-9-12. 1-9-12. 1-9-12. I'm an addict. I'm sorry. I'll help you. And they forget all the ones in between. Okay? Don't forget what you need to do to get to 8. Does that work 1%? That admit who you are, find the source greater than yourself, trust in that source. Trust in another individual, share with another individual, get honest about who you are right now, ask God to come in and change who you are to a place where you need to be, and then you start the process through 8 and 9 of helping others. You begin to give back to others as it was just given to you. You heal, let them heal. In that process, you become a better person. Thanks for letting me share that.
Thanks a lot, Randy. I would like to introduce the second speaker.
Ron?
I don't know your home group. But I'll let you go ahead.
Hi, my name's Ron. I am an addict and always will be. I don't know how I can add anything to what he said, what Randy said, you know, except to how it works for me. You know, when I was out there using, I don't care about making, apologizing or making amends to anybody. You know, that got in my way. You know, if you got hurt, tough traffic. You know, that's the way it is. That's life. Go for it. You know, when I came into this program, I learned a lot of stuff. I learned a lot of stuff in this thing. And one of the things was that I had to learn how to get a conscience. Because I didn't have that when I was out there using it. You know, a conscience is the last thing I need. And I thought conscience was supposed to make you feel good, but you know, I found out conscience could be a real nasty beast. It can make you do things that you need to do that you don't want to do. And if you don't have the humility to do it, you're not going to do it. You know, I didn't do it because I didn't have humility. I didn't know what humility was. You know, I don't have a whole lot of it today. But what I have thanks to Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, when I did my first step, my sponsor told me, he says, now, he says, we're not going to throw this away, we're not going to burn it, you're going to keep it for your 8th and 9th step. And he says, it doesn't matter if you think they did anything to you, or you did, or they did do something to you, you have to look at your part in it. Why do you feel this way? What was it that you may have done that may have caused them to react in this certain way? You know, and you know, that's a real scary thing to look at. You know, that self-centeredness, as Randy says, kicks in, and you don't want to look at your part in it. It's you know, that's not what living a new life was about at the beginning for me in this program. You know, it wasn't about looking at my part, it was about making myself feel better.
Getting some humility in my life to do this thing. And, so my sponsor said, do a 4th and 5th step. And I did my 5th step with a Catholic priest, a person I never met before. I didn't do it with my sponsor. I did it with a Catholic priest. And that is a real scary thing, real humbling, because for one particular item I had in my 4th step, and that was I was angry towards God. And I told the priest that. And I thought he was going to grab me by the ear and throw me out of the building. He didn't do that. But, you know, I got done with that, and my sponsor says, well, now you're finally in the program. You're not around it. You're in it. He says, now comes the hard part. He says, now comes working on you, the defects, and admitting where you were wrong. And that was hard. You know, one of the hardest amends that I've had to make in my life was to me. That was one of the hardest. You know, basically because my self-centeredness had been so strong that I didn't see why I hurt me or anybody else. You know, and if I don't see it, how can I deal with it? You know, so my sponsor helped me out quite a bit with that. And he told me that no matter what list I make, what inventory list I make, I must put myself first. It has to go down there first. That my resentment was towards me, that's the first one. The person I must make amends to was towards me. That's the first one. Because if I can't make amends towards myself, if I can't forgive myself, if I can't show myself how I can change, how am I going to do that with anybody else? There's no way that's going to happen. You know, I can speak the words, I can do the actions, but if I don't feel it inside of me, how's it going to matter? How's it going to work? You know, my definition of recovery is peace of mind and peace of heart. And I found doing the 8th and 9th step that gives me my peace of mind and peace of heart. Those are steps that free me of self. It frees me of self because I'm willing to admit where I was wrong. Not saying sorry, because people have heard those words from me from the beginning, and to me the word sorry don't mean shit. It don't mean a damn thing. But when I admit that I'm wrong, then that's making me look at that I did have a part in it. My actions or my words or anything that I projected out towards people that was in the negative side. When I say I was wrong, I admit that. You know, admitting that change. And it needs to be changed. You know, it took me a long time to realize that amends meant change, too. I didn't know that right off the bat. I thought amends meant, I'm sorry for what I did, I won't do it again. That's not amends. Because how many times did I say that when I was out there? Especially when I first came into the program. I'm sorry, I won't do it again. Chances are within a week or a month or 2 months, I was doing it again, doing the same thing over and over. The insanity of it. Same thing over and over and expecting different results. You know? But I had also learned, too, that the 8th and 9th step has little trap in it. Especially the 9th step has little trap in it. I make amends to somebody and they don't accept it, then I get a resentment again. I get the resentment, how dare they not accept my amends? I humbled myself, I said I was wrong, and they told me to go and get out. I pick up a resentment. You know, my sponsor told me when you get resentment like that, he says, you got to do it all over again. And you got to mean it. And then you got to learn to let it go when they say, come on, I don't accept it. You know, he told me that my amends was for me, not for anybody else. It was for me. It was to cleanse my side of the street, to clear away the wreckage. And I had a hard time with that at the beginning because I thought making amends is for the other person. And it's not. You know, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when you do so, but into them or others. And the others I found out is me. You know, there's a lot of people in my life, in my past, that I cannot make amends to. Because they're either going to come after me with knives and guns, or they're going to run from me. And, you know, I asked my sponsor, I talked to my sponsor quite a bit, and I asked him, you know, how do I deal with those kinds of amends? And he told me, he says, just pray. Pray for them. Pray for you. Not for them, but for you. You know, pray that you ask your higher powers to forgive you for what you did to them. You know, and that takes a long time, and making amends to the family was actually the easy part, because I knew what I did to them. You know, I knew that I stole money from my sons on Christmas and birthday time, took the money out of the birthday cards and had the money in my pocket, and then told them off the bat, while the money is still in my pocket, that they didn't get no money because their aunts and uncles didn't have anything. You know, that was an easy amend. They didn't accept it right away because they didn't know anything else about what I was trying to do, what I was changing, what I was trying to change. And it was only through change that the amends became acceptable to them. You know, anytime I make an amend, accept it or not, it is a success to me. Because I was willing to admit my fault. I was willing to admit that my actions were wrong and that I am working on changing. I heard a saying that I am a work in progress. I guess that's what it's called. And you know, that's what I am. You know, I don't make amends all the time. You know, I still think that I am justified in what I did. But the one thing I have learned was that I don't expect amends. That's not what it's about for me. Because if I expect somebody to make an amends for me, I could be waiting a long time, and that'll build up my resentment towards that person. I've learned not to expect amends from anybody. Because those amends that they make are not for me. If I think they are for me, then where is my self-centeredness gone? It hasn't gone anywhere. My self-centeredness has not gone anywhere. You know, if I have to work on all this stuff, I'm just new. You know, 5 years, I'm just new. I'm going to be new to this amends thing till the day I die. There's nothing that's going to be easy for me on these amends. I'm talking real easy. Because I am an addict. Always will be. And part of that is always going to come to the surface. No matter what I do. No matter how perfect I think I do things. It's always going to come back. And the best thing that I can do is keep working on that stuff so it doesn't come back. But I found when I make my amends to somebody, accept it or not, I have gained peace of mind and peace of heart. Because I have accepted my responsibility in that thing. One of the first amends I made was to a guy I knew in school, and I would put dead rats in his locker. You know, and I asked my sponsor, how can I deal with this? How can I get it out to him? And he told me, write a letter to him. Let him know what you want to talk to him about. And give him the option whether or not he wants to see you. You know, today I go down once a month to his house to have dinner with his family. That's a success story. That's a story where the amend. I can't say whether it was good because, as I said, the amends, whether accepted or not, is good for me. And there are a lot of amends that I have made that was not accepted. And it's hard to know when it's going to hurt them or myself or the other. I not only have to talk with my sponsor, but I have to talk to the Great Spirit too to find out if it's the right thing to do. And people I can't make amends to, whether they're dead or someplace else, I have to pray for myself to allow myself to forgive myself for this and to do something different in my life to make amends to them. Not to do the same thing that I did to them, as Randy said. And, you know, I do the best that I can. I don't always do it right, but I do the best that I can. But I've also learned, too, that what I know, I was not capable of getting by myself. It did take the we of the program. It did take the people in these rooms to help me understand that. Because, see, I'm an addict who doesn't know how to do things by himself. Except mess things up. I could do that real good. So, I don't know. This is something that was good to hear. Good to talk about because no matter how many amends that I've made up to this point, I'm still always going to have to make them. They're always going to come up. Even when I do the 10th step, admit when I'm wrong right away, I still got other stuff coming up to my path that I still have to make amends for. I don't do this step once and then just let it go. I got to do it constantly, over and over. And sometimes it gets bad. Sometimes it pisses me off. But see, when it pisses me off is when that nasty beast calls, the conscience starts kicking in. Well, what gives you the right to continue hurting somebody and not do something about it? That's when my conscience kicks in. I don't have that right to continue hurting somebody unless I'm willing to do something about it. And if it means just walking up to him and saying, I was wrong, what more can I do after that? I can say, I promise I'll do this for you, I'll do that for you. Promises don't mean nothing, once again, because how many times we make promises and not keep them? You know, I have to show them. Action speaks louder than words. Especially when making the amends, it speaks louder than words, action does. And that takes a long time to learn. I imagine that I'm still going to be learning this when I'm 90 years old. I'm still going to be learning how to make my actions speak louder than my words. And I hope I do keep learning. Because if I stop learning this stuff, I'm going to forget it. And no matter what I do in this program, it's not going to matter much if I forget what I've learned early in recovery, what I'm learning today. Do I have resentment for some of the amends I made because they wasn't accepted yet? I do. And when I do my next yearly fourth step, that will go down into my fourth step list, the resentment. Well, this so-and-so didn't accept my amend. I got to put that down in my fourth step because I'm going to have to go back to him again, one way or the other. I'll talk with my sponsor and see who I should go see and who I shouldn't and all that. And there are times when my ego kicks in and I'm not going to talk to my sponsor because I think that I can do it better than what he can advise. And when I do that, that's when things go wrong again. That's usually when they won't accept my amends, and that's when I pick up my resentments. You know, I got to do what is suggested in this program. These aren't suggestions to me. These are musts today. I must be willing to listen to what people have to say, whether I agree with them or not. I have to be willing to listen, because that's how I learn. That's how I've learned to do what few amends I have done. And all of them have been successful. Not all of them. Some I still have resentment for. Most of them have been successful. Not because they were accepted, but because I was willing enough to go and do it, whether I wanted to or not. That, to me, is a successful amend. When I'm willing to do it, whether I want to or not, and mean it. If I don't mean the amends, then it's nothing but words. That's all.
Thanks a lot, Ron. I would like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. If we have the reading of just for today at the podium, please.
I'm Jim, I'm an addict. Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. Just for today.
Thanks, Jim.
Welcome.
We have a nice way of closing. We please form a circle and close with the Wii version of Serenity.
Suffering addicts inside and outside these rooms, from little children who were born with this terrible disease, followed by the reversion of